Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, maybe they just couldn't wait to seat Sonia Sotomayor. Usually the first Monday in October is opening day for the U.S. Supreme Court, and they'll still have all those opening day ceremonies next month. But today is the second Wednesday in September, 09-09-09, in fact, and yet they are hearing a case. It turns out Justice Sotomayor's first case will be quite out of the ordinary and potentially quite historic. The court is hurrying to hear a major challenge both to Congress and to long precedent to consider overturning the ban on direct corporate direct corporate and union donations to political campaigns. The question is it a violation of free speech to have such a ban? The trigger for the case was a movie called Hillary the Movie that was ruled to be a political campaign attack ad against Hillary Clinton. Here is a commercial for the film.
Who is Hillary Clinton?
She's continually trying to redefine herself and figure out who she is.
At least with Bill Clinton, he was just, you know, good time Charlie. Hillary's got an agenda.
Hillary is really the closest thing we have in America to a European socialist.
If you thought you knew everything about Hillary Clinton, wait till you see the movie. Hillary, the movie, on DVD now.
Well, that movie, never screened as part of the campaign, is now a footnote to political history. But will it become a footnote to legal history? There is a lot at stake for how campaigns are funded and how elections and lawmaking turn out. With us are Peter Overby, NPR's Money, Power, and Influence correspondent, my favorite title of any NPR correspondent, and Daphne Evyatar, who covers the Supreme Court for the Washington Independent. Welcome back, both of you. Good morning.
Thanks, Brian.
Daphne, you there? All right, I think Daphne can't hear me for the moment. Peter, what was that anti-Hillary movie exactly?
Well, it was made to raise concerns about Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary. Overlooked the fact that they were aiming at the wrong target, as it turned out. it was produced by Citizens United, a conservative group with deep roots in sort of the First Amendment issues, you know, pushing campaign finance laws. And so that the movie had two goals, basically. One had to do with Hillary Clinton, the candidate. The other had to do with McCain-Feingold, the campaign finance law. They wanted to challenge the idea that under McCain-Feingold, you can't finance an ad during the run-up to an election or a primary. You can't finance that ad with corporate or union money. So the ads promoting the movie would have been at issue, and the movie itself would have been an issue because they were all financed with corporate funds. So they produced it. The thing immediately went to court, wound up the Supreme Court, and here we are.
And here we are. And listeners, we want to know your opinion. Do you think a movie like this should be deemed campaign speech and be regulated as such? Should, and we'll get to the underlying issue, corporate donations and union donations directly made to campaigns be against the law? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. So, Peter, one more detail there. Where does the issue of corporate donations come in?
It comes in because in 1907, Congress passed a law banning corporate money going to candidates. The law later got expanded to cover corporate money playing generally in political campaigns and also to union money. So you have that broad restriction on corporate funds, and this case threatens to overturn it. It didn't start out that way. When the case first went to the Supreme Court last year, it was a much more limited question. And on the last day of the session, the Supreme Court said, we're not ruling on this case. We want to have another oral argument, and we want it to address the question of, they didn't say it quite like this, but we wanted to address the question of corporate funding.
Right. And what corporations are involved here? Because the way you described it and the way I've read about it elsewhere, the producers of the film, Citizens United, are an activist group. That are, you know, more interested in a political outcome. They're not a company. So who are these corporations, and why is that central?
We don't know who they are. Because,
you don't know who they are?
Yeah, because there's no disclosure.
No disclosure required?
Right.
Interesting. Daphne Evyatar, what's the scene going to be like at the court this morning with respect to this case?
Well, I think it's going to be very tense, and the reason is because this is an extremely unusual thing for the court to do. Normally, the court does not want to reach out and decide an issue it doesn't have to, and that's sort of tradition in the court. And what conservatives usually say that liberal judges are activists and they want to reach out and decide issues that are not before them. And in fact, here what you have is the conservative bloc on the Supreme Court that decided, we're not just going to decide this case. We want you to argue something further, which is whether we should overturn these previous campaign finance restrictions that we've previously upheld. They've previously specifically upheld these kinds of restrictions on corporate spending. But you have a new bloc of conservatives since the last time they ruled on a case like this that is very skeptical of limiting corporate contributions because they see it as a limit on the speech of corporations. So it's extremely unusual, and the mood is going to be very tense because people are wondering, well, they must be poised to overturn these laws or they wouldn't call a special session and have a second argument in the same case. It's just very unusual.
And to that point, I want to play a couple of clips. This is Chief Justice Roberts, one of the most famous lines from his confirmation hearings.
Judges and justices are servants of the law, not the other way around. Judges are like umpires. Umpires don't make the rules, they apply them. The role of an umpire and a judge is critical. They make sure everybody plays by the rules, but it is a limited role. Nobody ever went to a ball game to see the umpire.
So says Judge Roberts, but everybody's going to the Supreme Court today to hear this challenge to precedent that he seemed to reach into the guts of this case to bring to the court. That is why Senator Russell Feingold of Wisconsin, of course a sponsor of the McCain-Feingold law, had this to say about Judge Roberts and the notion of judicial activism generally during Sonia Sotomayor's confirmation hearing.
That is why I suggest to everyone watching today that they be a little wary of a phrase that they're hearing at this hearing, judicial activism. That term really seems to have lost all usefulness, particularly since so many rulings of the conservative majority on the Supreme Court can fairly be described as activists in their disregard for precedent and their willingness to ignore or override the intent of Congress. At this point, perhaps we should all accept that the best definition of a judicial activist is a judge who decides a case in a way you don't like.
Or other people judicial activism on the basis of laws that were passed by legislatures, including Congress, that judges then decide to overturn. Daphne, do you know the congressional history of this?
Well, there certainly was there's been a long battle over regulating corporate contributions, and the McCain-Feingold bill was this bipartisan effort to say we want to prevent the flooding of campaigns by corporate money. It doesn't mean that corporations can't contribute. They can create political action committees and they can contribute to parties in that way, but they're not supposed to control elections. And by removing that restriction, which is what this case threatens to do, it would really allow corporations to basically pay completely for elections and for campaigns and to control that political process.
But Peter Overby, corporations do funnel a lot of money into campaigns indirectly through PACs and other means, don't they?
Well, strictly speaking, the PAC money is individual contributions from corporate executives. So, you know, you can argue whether that's corporate money indirectly or not. What the corporations can't do is use shareholder money, you know, corporate treasury funds, to play in politics. They can do it indirectly supporting nonprofit advocacy groups and lobby efforts, things like that. But you can't give corporate money to the national political parties, and you can't give it to candidates.
And what's the difference supposed to be with respect to the actual effect on policy, on the law, on democracy? If individuals from a corporation can have their money bundled and give it to candidates, knowing that they're trying to act in the interest of their company, if not their industry, the difference between that and direct corporate donations by the company, how fine a line is it with respect to the actual impact on democracy?
Well, I think that the difference is that the corporation, although it has personhood status under Supreme Court law, it has only one interest. An individual donor may have a lot of different interests. The corporate executive may also, for instance, care about the environment or something like that. But the corporation has one goal, which is to turn a profit, and that sets it apart from the others.
Listeners, should corporations be treated as people with respect to political speech and political donations as a form of political speech? That's really what's at issue before the U.S. Supreme Court today. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. For Peter Overby, NPR's Money, Power, and Influence correspondent, and Daphne Evyatar, covering the case for The Washington Independent. And Daphne, it doesn't sound like you like this idea very much, but here is an argument from a Brooklyn Law School professor who compares free speech for newspaper owners to free speech for other corporations. He writes, we allow the corporate owners of the New York Times to endorse a presidential candidate, but make it a crime for the corporate owners of General Motors to pay for an ad with the same message, even though the First Amendment protects freedom of speech and the press equally. Moreover, approximately half the states have permitted independent corporate speech in their elections, and the sky has not fallen. A ruling for Citizens United would not open the corporate floodgates, but would end these disparities and free up more political speech. So there are a few arguments there. What about that comparison between the owners of the New York Times and the owners of General Motors and their relative free speech?
I think, the owners of General Motors can write an op-ed in the New York Times, and it would likely get printed because they're very powerful, and they could make all the political arguments they want. And in fact, they pay for advertisements in the New York Times, and they're allowed to do that. But it's very different to say that the corporations can directly give money to the candidates and fund their campaigns. And the New York Times can't do that either. I mean, it's the fact that its editorial board is allowed to speak, General Motors is allowed to speak as well. There are limits on how much money it can give to control that process, the whole campaign process.
And what about the argument that it would just free up more political speech to have this go in favor of the corporations? And more political speech is better than less political speech in a free society.
Well, I mean, in theory, that's great, except that in reality, if you have the money to pay for more political speech, then you can drown out the people who don't have the money. So, I mean, to look at it in a very sort of black and white kind of way, corporations have a lot of money. Average individuals don't. Poor people don't. Middle class people don't have the kind of money that will allow their speech to be heard in the same way. So it's not an even playing field. And it's not that the courts or Congress have ever really made it an even playing field, but they're trying to prevent some of the extreme inequities by regulating the way that corporations and directors of corporations can give. And so it certainly doesn't solve the problem, but it's not, if you allow everyone to speak as much as they want, it's the ones who have the most power and money to get their voice heard that will dominate the conversation. I think that's the problem.
Maria in Manhattan on the Lower East Side. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
Sure.
I don't think corporations should be treated as individuals. I think the previous caller made it very clear that they have much more money to spend. I'm always going to be on the side of free speech, but when it comes to the rights of an individual, we need to keep them for individuals so that a corporation doesn't drown out the individual with its agendas. As soon as you give corporations the right of an individual in terms of free speech, they can basically buy politicians, they can swing votes, and if anything goes wrong, like just a quick example, Exxon Valdez, the corporation becomes responsible, but there's no individual that is held responsible.
Maria, thank you very much. Now, on this question of drowning out speech, and that's, you know, such a delicate balance, when do you prevent speech in the name of preserving speech? And that's really what McCain-Feingold is intended to do, and some of the other campaign finance laws, I'm sure, including the one that prohibits corporate speech. If some people have so much money to spend that it winds up drowning out the voices of people who have much less to spend, then is that more speech or is that in effect less speech? And Peter Overby, what about the unions? Because I think that's an overlooked part of this case. The law prohibits direct donations to political campaigns by corporations and by unions. What side are the unions on?
Well, Brian, just to back up for a minute, the drowning out aspect, the Supreme Court in its recent campaign finance cases has been saying that leveling the playing field is not a legitimate government interest in enacting campaign finance law.
Uh-huh. If that's so, their position, then they would throw out the entire McCain-Feingold campaign finance law, wouldn't they? Because the whole point was to regulate soft money, so-called, so that it wouldn't be a funnel from corporations or wealthy individuals as an unlimited spigot that that winds up drowning out other speech.
Well, there's also the element of corruption or the appearance of corruption.
Right.
And, you know, they said basically you can justify campaign finance regulation on that, but not on the leveling the playing field.
We're
going to
run out of time soon. What about the union aspect here?
The unions basically don't have nearly as much money as the corporations do. So they're not insignificant, but they are, in the long run, not nearly as big a player on this.
So are the unions staking out an alliance with the corporations on this because they still want the ability to give money directly to campaigns, or are they opposing it because even though it would regulate them, they feel it's more in the interest of getting their voices heard?
To be honest, I'm not sure because as I've been following this, it's the corporate money that is the
central issue.
The gorilla in the room.
Daphne,
yeah.
Do you happen to know?
You know, it's true that the corporate money issue has dominated the debate, and so I don't think that the unions have really weighed in on it, or because I don't think that that's really been the big issue. As Peter said, he's absolutely right that corporations have a lot more money.
Peter in East Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Brian. I like your show.
Thank you.
The point I wanted to make is the issue at the root here is the personhood of corporations. There was a time when corporations were not treated as if they were individual human beings. And I don't think they ever should be. There was even, in fact, a time when a corporate charter had a time limit, and it would expire when the corporation had served its purpose. So unless the issue of personhood gets treated, we're never going to get anywhere.
Peter,
so what's going on in this particular case is an attempt to extend the personhood rights of corporations. And I think there's a real disconnect in that.
Thank you very much. Do either of you know the ACLU position?
They are with Citizens United.
They are?
Yes.
So you have the ACLU with this very
It's fairly traditional for them to take the absolutist free speech position on campaign finance. They argue that there ought to be a floor provided for candidates, a financial floor, but there shouldn't be restrictions at the high end.
All right. We'll see how this turns out. The Supreme Court hearing arguments in this case today. Peter Overby, NPR's Money, Power, and Influence correspondent, and Daphne Evyatar, covering it for The Washington Independent. Thank you both so much.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Speaking of campaign donations, we will meet New York City Comptroller candidate Melinda Katz in a minute. One of the big knocks on her by her opponents is that she's getting too much money from the real estate industry. Stay with us.